scripture text this morning as we begin the 23rd chapter of the Gospel of Luke. It flows in into the last two chapters in the Gospel of Luke. Luke, the 23rd chapter, verses 1 through 25. Verses 1 through 25, found on page, I think, 1216 in the Pew Bible. If you're using the Pew Bible, it's found on page 1216. Luke 23, verses 1 through 25. Then the whole multitude of them arose and led him to Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "And we found this fellow perverting the nation, and is forbidden to pay taxes to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, the King." And Pilate asked him, saying, "You are the King of the Jews?" He answered him and said, "It is as you say." So Pilate said to the chief priests and the crowd, "I find no fault in this man." But they were more fierce, saying, "He stirs up the people, teaches throughout all Judea, and beginning from Galilee to this place." When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked if the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. Now when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad, for he had desired for a long time to see him, because he had heard many things about him, and he hoped to see some miracle done by him. Then he questioned him with many words, but Jesus answered him nothing. And the chief priests and the scribes stood and vehemently accused him. Then Herod, with his men of war, treated him with contempt and mocked him, arrayed him with a gorgeous robe, and sent him back to Pilate. That very day, Pilate and Herod became friends with each other, for previously they had been at enmity with each other. Then Pilate, when he had called together the chief priests and the rulers of the people, said to them, "You have brought this man to me as one who misleads the people. And indeed, having examined him in your presence, I have found no fault in this man concerning these things of which you accused him, neither did Herod. For I sent you back to him, and indeed nothing deserving of death has been done by him. I will therefore chastise him and release him. For it was necessary for him to release one of them at the feast." And they all cried out at once, saying, "Away with this man, released to us Barabbas, who has been thrown into prison for a certain rebellion made in the city and for murder." Pilate, therefore, wishing to release Jesus again, called out to them, but they shouted, saying, "Crucify him, crucify him." Then he said to them the third time, "Why? What evil has he done? For I have found no reason for death in him. I will therefore chastise him and let him go." But they were insistent, demanded with loud voices that he be crucified. And the voices of these men and of the chief priests prevailed. So Pilate gave sentence that he should be as they requested. And he released to them the one they requested, who for rebellion and murder had been thrown into prison. But he delivered Jesus to their will. We ask the Lord's blessings upon the reading of His holy word. Luke is different. Matthew, Mark, and even John, again. He leaves out some things that they spend time on explaining. He glosses over some things that they spend more time on explaining. So we want to understand why the difference, and I think that it's important. It doesn't mean that Luke's better than Matthew, Mark, and John. It doesn't mean that Matthew or Mark and John are better than Luke. It means that they're telling it from a little bit different perspective and the way that they see it. And we have to remember that Luke, number one, was a Gentile. Number two, he was writing this gospel, and he was writing the book of Acts to follow to the Gentile church. And he's also writing the people who were the people that he named in the very beginning, are high-ranking officials in the court of Caesar. And so he wants to give the Roman government and Pilate, in this case, who's a representative of the Roman government, a little bit more of a, he had a way out, or he took the way out, or why he took the way out, you know? Matthew and Mark kind of do the same thing. But we see here that at almost four different times, if you go from the first part of our reading and then the three times toward the last time, that he wants to let Jesus go and release him. And all the Gospels agree with that, that he wants to let Jesus go and release him. But that the crowd, mainly the scribes and the Pharisees and the members of the Sanhedrin who were there, did not want that to happen. And then they also got the people to stand up against Jesus. It starts out that they brought him to Pilate. Notice the three charges. The first one, Pilate could care less about. The fact that he was trying to lead the people astray in his teachings, he could care less about. But the other two could cause some problems. The other two, if it was true that he was trying to keep him from people from paying taxes to Caesar, and that he would claim himself to be a king over and above Caesar, if those had been proven to be true, then he would have something that he had to deal with. Matthew, Mark, and John have more Pilate's questioning. All Luke tells us is that he questioned him, and after questioning him, that he found no fault in him. And the only question that he really asked, quoted in Luke, was, and it's not asked properly in the way that it is in the Greek. And in the Greek, it says, are you, not in the Greek, in the way it's interpreted in the Bible, and I read from the New King James and in most of the Bibles, he asks, are you the Son of God? But in the Greek, he reverses this to are you. And he looks at it, he says, you are the Son of God? And he got to kind of picture what's being done here. Here is Jesus, and he's been presented before Pilate, right? He's just been beaten and mocked and whipped and treated ruefully by the temple guards. And he's brought to Pilate. He's probably got black eyes. He's got bruises all inside his face. He's got bruises on his neck. He is showing by his clothing and the rubbing of his clothing that he has been brutally treated and mistreated. And Pilate looks at this guy standing before him who looks absolutely nothing like a king and says, you are the Son of God? He can't believe the charge. By looking at Jesus, he can't believe the charge, because if he was really the Son of God, then he wouldn't be treated that way, would he? He wouldn't allow himself to be treated that way. He would have a power to keep from being treated that way, right? We don't know what the other questions are. We do if we want to read Matthew, Mark, or some of them. Mark, Luke doesn't tell. Because for Luke, those are not important. The thing that's important to Luke here is that he wants us to understand the politics of the situation. He wants us to understand that this whole thing was one big political hoorah. And what we have here is a situation that two people are a person, a ruler, a procurator, and a group of people who could not stand one another, who resented one another. Probably we could go so far as to they hated one another, at the very, very, very least, disrespected one another. Working together to accomplish the same purpose. That would almost be like Lester Maddox and Martha Luther King working together to achieve a common purpose. But the thing about politics is as they say it, it makes strange bedfellows. You have power. And you see, in the Roman government, there were other places that were probably worse to serve than Palestine, but Palestine was considered the armpit of the Roman Empire. It was the place that you were sent to when you were being punished, or when you felt like you were being punished. Now, there were other places. There was the outer reaches of what would be Persia at that time, of what would be Iran today, or you was on the border of the Roman Empire, and out there was a group of people called the Parthians that the Romans could never subdue and could never control, and they were always having border skirmishes and incursions into the Roman Empire. And if you were sent there to be the proper leader over that particular area, you would pretty much be at war at all times. Another place that I would consider to probably be worse than being in Palestine would have been in the area of Gaul, where you would be the populator over that area, where you were continuously being attacked by Germanic tribes that were coming in at that time. It was a place that was not peaceful either. But even maybe even worse than that is that Rome had already gone into Great Britain, and to be the populator over the area of Great Britain where you were completely surrounded by Celts, and they were causing problems all the time, would have been just another bad place to be. So really, Pilate couldn't say, I'm in the worst place, what could you do to me? He could have gone somewhere that was worse, but he didn't want to be there. He didn't want to be there. He hated being there. I don't know why he hated being there so much. He lived a life of luxury in Caesarea by the sea. I've seen videos of the ruins of Herod the Great's palace. It's what he lived in, where he had this huge, huge palace, supposedly. Of course, just the foundations and stuff are there now. And it leads out this huge, beautiful, you can imagine what a beautiful place it probably was. And it leads out onto a huge, big courtyard. We have an Olympic-sized pool that goes out into the Mediterranean Sea. I mean, that's where he lived, except for the three main holidays. He stayed in Caesarea Philippi. It wasn't like he was living in a hut somewhere, but he didn't want to be there. He felt like he married Tiberius' wife and his daughter. He felt like being the son-in-law to the emperor, that he ought to have a better spot. He felt like he had been mistreated, and he hated being there. And he proved it from the first moment he got there. Tiberius was always sending letters to him saying, cool it, calm down. The two worst things that he ever did was that he went up into Galilee and he slaughtered a bunch of people who were following a guy who was non-violent. He had never done anything, but he went up there and they slaughtered him. That's what Herod was mad at him about. Another thing that he liked to do, he loved to rub the Sanhedrin's noses into things. And he was all the time doing something to the temple. The worst thing that he did was that he made the pantheon for all the Roman gods, and he put their names on golden shields, and he went and placed them not in the Holy of Holies, but in the second holy place where the showbread was, and the lamp, and the door, and all that. And of course, here comes the letter, several months later, from Caesar, saying, cool it, dude. Why are you doing these things? He didn't like the Sanhedrin. He didn't like the priesthood. Sanhedrin didn't like him. It was mutual hatred or disrespect for one another. But the Sanhedrin needed him to approve the death sentence for it to be, as I said before, public. And they wanted it public. And so they bring it. And Pilate's first thing was that he just wanted to relieve Jesus. He questioned him. He saw that they were there because of envy. And he just wanted to release them, but they became very vocal and very fierce. And a crowd had begun to collect. And so he keeps asking, what has he done? What has he done? And of course, he knew what he was being accused of. And you see, there was a problem. Because even though Jesus was not guilty of telling people not to pay taxes, and because Jesus was not guilty of proclaiming himself a king over and above Caesar, if these people wanted to, you see, they had their friends in the court at Rome. Tiberius' father, Augustus, was good buddies with Herod the Great, as I shared with you the other week. When Herod the Great started going off the deep end, and Augustus said to 11, my brother, I don't know who you are anymore. It is said that his sons, Philip and Herod Antipas, spent much time in Caesar's palace. The Sanhedrin had their representatives in Caesar's court. And of course, he knew that if he went against them overtly and said, I'm going to release them, that what they were going to do is they're going to send the Caesar. He released this guy. He said not to pay you taxes. And he's claiming himself to be a king instead of you. And so he's trying to walk a political rope here. He doesn't really want to do what they want him to do because he can't stand them and he wants to cut off their noses to spite their faces. But he also understands that they have a say, and he has to play a little political game, and they get real vocal, and they say, he's been unsettling the people all the way from Galilee to Judea. And Pilate all of a sudden sees a way out. He sees a way out. He's from Judea. He's a Galilean. He's Herod's guy. Send him to Herod. Let Herod pronounce judgment on him. So he sends him to Herod. And Herod wants to meet him. He's glad to meet him. Not really wants to talk to him or hear him teach or preach or anything like that, but he wants to see him perform a miracle. I love in Jesus Christ Superstar, he says, walk across my swimming pool, you know, in that song. He wanted to see that miracle. And he begins to question Jesus, begins to ask him for a miracle. Jesus doesn't say anything. He's quiet. And while he's quiet, says that the Sanhedrin who followed into Herod's palace where he was staying in Jerusalem for the Passover, that they start shouting the charges and shouting the charges and shouting the charges. And Herod gets frustrated because Jesus wouldn't talk to him. And it says that they begin to treat him ruefully and to mock him, which means that they are saying slanderous things about him, probably blasphemous things about him, and probably doing some more physical abuse to him as well. And it says that they put a robe of celebration around him and send him back to Pilate. Now, in the movies and things, they show that as a purple robe. But in reality, it was probably a white robe that is rolled up and placed upon the shoulders like a mantle on a person who is a guest of honor. And in sarcasm, they take this white robe and they roll it up and they place it on his mantle and around his neck and they send him back to power. But Herod refuses to do it. Why? because Herod's not stupid. People are already mad at him for killing John the Baptist. This guy is also considered a prophet. This guy is really considered a prophet in his home territory of Galilee. He's already killed John the Baptist for no reason at all. He is not going to take the chance of having Jesus killed for no reason at all. So he says, I find no fault in him, and he sends him back to power. So you have the whole entourage coming back now again to the Antonio Fortress. And Pilate says, I find no fault in him. Herod found no fault in him. I'm going to punish him and turn him loose. Now, Jesus hadn't done anything to earn any type of punishment, but he's hoping that he can appease the people. And the Sanhedrin gets worse. And again, what has he done? Tell me what he has done. And they just get worse and worse and worse. And he says, it's not time for me this time either to release somebody to you. I will punish him, and then I will release him to you, because at this time of year, I always release somebody to you. And they start shouting, no, release to us Barabbas. Release to us Barabbas. He says, well, then, what do you want me to do with Jesus? And they yell even louder, crucify him. Crucify him. And through this whole thing, the crowd has gotten bigger. And the crowd has gotten louder. And you wonder, some of these people were the same people that just a few days before had welcomed him in as a triumphant king. Why are these people now shouting, crucify him? Crucify him. Have you ever been mad at God? Have you ever been disappointed in anything that God has done for you? Or that God hasn't done for you? Have you had something that's been on your heart and you've been praying, you've been almost to the point to where you feel like you're begging God to answer this particular prayer, and for some reason, you don't know why, you don't know what you need to do, you know, you think you can do something to make God owe you this prayer or whatever it is, but for some reason, something that you think that you need is something that you want, it is something that you desire, it is something that even from the standpoint of any perspective is something that is good, and yet God has not answered that prayer. Have you ever been in that situation? I have. Most of God's people that we read about in the Bible, they have. It's one of the things I love about David. When something like that has happened, David will come, Lord, why are you letting them do these things to me? Lord, why are you letting them gnash at me with their teeth? Lord, why are you not lifting me up? Lord, why am I suffering under their foot? Why, Lord? Why, Lord? Why, Lord? Why, Lord? Why, Lord? Expectation is not met. Even Jesus had a little bit of this in the garden that we read about. We come, Father, and He said, I will take this cup away from you. His prayer was, the cup be taken away. And it wasn't. And people have this expectation. Here comes Jesus. They claim that he's the Messiah. They're singing the hymns that they would sing for the Messiah coming. They're quoting from the 14 Psalms that are the Psalms of ascent to the temple as Jesus has descended down the Mount of Olives. Here it is. It's the Passover. It's the time that the perfect time. The perfect time. We have this new grand temple. The temple is almost complete. It's grander than even Solomon's temple. Now we have a temple that's grander than Solomon. Now the Messiah will come and he will dispose of the Romans and will again have our own nation, the nation of Israel, and part of it will be this
son of David and the Messiah will have come. Even the days. That is the Messiah that the Jewish people are looking for. There's a thing on Netflix that's called Looking for God with Morgan Freeman. And in one of the episodes, he was speaking with a Jewish rabbi in Jerusalem, and it's really interesting. He's standing there, and the Jewish rabbi's standing there, and they're standing on the top of the building, and you could look out over the Temple Mount, and where we're on the very top, of course, is the Muslim Dome of the Rock. And Morgan Freeman asked him, are the Jewish people still looking for a Messiah? And the rabbi answers, yes. But you see, Jesus isn't the Messiah, because the real Messiah is not going to be a spiritual man. The real Messiah is going to be a human conqueror. And one day, he will come back, and the temple will be rebuilt, and Israel will be redone. He said the Christians are wrong, because our scriptures don't speak about a spiritual Messiah. They speak about a human, conquering Messiah. Now, we just come out of bad days. I had to check and rewind it to make sure he wasn't a United Methodist, because we know that our scriptures that talk about the spiritual Messiah and the suffering servant. But you see, that's what they were expecting. And Jesus had disappointed them. They were expecting him to come and to read the uprising and to kick Pilate out of the whole area and to retake Jerusalem and retake Judah and retake Galilee, retake everything and reestablish the kingdom. And he, oh, you know what he did? He went and he sat in the temple ground and he talked about God and he talked about love. And they were mad. Because God had disappointed them. So they, you know, along with the Sanhedrin, crucify him. Crucify him. And pretty much through the whole thing, Jesus is silent. We know that he answered a few questions for Pilate. But even Pilate said in the other Gospels, don't you know I have the power of life and death over you? Why are you standing here so silent? And Jesus had to say, the only power that you have is what's been given you from my Father in heaven. And so Pilate finally caved in to the Sanhedrin and the mob that was there. Luke doesn't have him washing his hands. It says that he lets loose Barabbas, the man who had read an insurrection and committed murder. And he turned over to them Jesus, the man who had been accused of an insurrection and claiming to be a king. Man who had the proof that he had done these things was turned loose for an innocent man who had given over to death. I don't know if you thought about it, but the name Barabbas means Bar, which is son of Abba.
Son of the Father. Son of Daddy.
You see, the thing is, and this is the whole point that I believe, besides the whole political thing, that Luke wants us to understand, is that you and I are Barabbas. Because Jesus, in his innocence, was given over to be slain, to be beaten, to be whipped, to be scourged, to hang and die on the cross. Because the innocent was there to face and get and receive the judgment for my sins, my past sins, my present sins, my future sins, the sins of my ancestors, the sins of my descendants. And for all of our sins, those of us are here, and our ancestors and our descendants, and the sins for the whole world, because he paid that price. We are able to go free as children of the day.